The question which needs to be answered first is, what are the other opportunities for funding for people in this space? So the one that you want to tap into right now is the grant funding. Like, what are the foundations? What are the donors? What are they interested that overlaps with the podcasting space right now? I mean, the obvious answer in, maybe not in June 2020, but certainly in April and May 2020 was COVID-19. What sort of role can you as a podcast company play in, for example, educating people on the virus?
Welcome to the Podcast Sessions with your host, Retendo Nyamuda. Each week, we take you behind the mic as we interview podcast hosts, podcast producers, and those within the podcast industry. On today's show, we speak to the Program Director for Africa and the Middle East from the Media Development Investment Fund, Bilal Randeri.
Bilal, you wear a variety of hats. You are the director for the Media Development Investment Fund, as well as the program manager for the South African Media Innovation Program. In light of those two positions and roles that you have, if you could explain a little bit more about, I guess, those two companies and what you guys do.
My work is with MDIF, so the Media Development Investment Fund, where I am the Program Director for Africa and the Middle East. And MDIF is I wouldn't say the main organization, because it's the organization. SAMIP is the project that we run with other partners. But MDIF has been around for, you know, over 20 years. We operate globally in countries where there's a need for the type of media support that we do, both on the investment side and on the media development side. And so MDIF is a New York registered nonprofit, but we operate as a conventional fund. So we do both debt and equity funding with media companies. So typically it's been, a newspaper, radio station, TV station, in countries where it's hard for independent media to get funding and financing through conventional sources. And so this is our focus. We're looking at independent media, somebody who is not linked to political parties or to any interest groups or so on. And at the very early stages, we also evaluate the quality of the media. So we specifically focus on news media. If you do a bit of sports and entertainment as part of your product, but news is your core, and you've been operating for at least 3 years, profitable for at least one, this is what I usually describe as the ideal MDIF client. Someone who's figured out what their model is, someone who has an audience, who has respect in a certain space, but can't grow and progress because of the the market situation and possibly the political situation. They would approach us, and this would be our ideal client to finance. Now, the easiest form of funding is through a loan. So if you want to put up a TV station, you own the piece of land. Fine, we've got some collateral for our loan. The team coming together, a respected, well-known journalist. Perfect. You know, that would be, a very good example of something that we would fund. Somebody starting a podcast, quite new, but figured out what the revenue model is, could be interesting. But in that case, we would then have to look at maybe doing an equity investment, because debt won't work, because it's a virtual a business which has revenue potential, but doesn't have assets as collateral. So this is generally like MDIF, and this is, we work, over 100 countries across the world. But SAMIP is very different. So the South African Media Innovation Program started late 2017 in partnership with OSF, Open Society Foundation for South Africa, and now what is Luminate, spun off from Omidia Network. And SAMIP is very different from MDIF in the sense that we're looking at businesses, media businesses, and organizations that are at a much early stage. And also importantly, we're not just looking at businesses. So SAMUP came into the space with six focus areas. Three, I would say roughly to do with innovation in the South African media space. Mm-hmm. And three, with a transformation lens, again, you know, with the South African context in mind. And SAMUP also as a program now is in its final year. We set out to say, can we work with early stage organizations, accelerate their growth and progress, and towards the end, which where we are now, see if any are ready for investment.
Okay.
So we've concluded the first investment already, and we've got a few more in the pipeline. Yeah. And this will take now another 2 or 3 years to conclude that after the active part of the program ends. So the activities of the program, maybe also I can quickly touch on, is like three separate buckets of funding. One is a capacity building. So within that, we're doing assigning a mentor to each project we work with. We're doing technical assistance in the form of workshops, bringing an expert in to help with some issue you're facing. You know, it's often like bespoke assistance in that regard. And then the other two buckets, one is the grant funding. So everyone's been given a small grant to kind of accelerate their growth. And then the third is what we're spending out of now is the equity funding to say, okay, who's progressed in the last 3 years to the point where we can make an investment into still a risky business in an early stage investment.
Yeah,
but the type of investment that MDIF wouldn't typically do, because it's still, you know, still a risky business that needs to properly find its seat.
If we can take it back to the start of the reason why you decided, because you took up podcastism in quite a big group, and what was the reason for you guys to say let's bring in podcasters in a big group and let's focus on podcasts for this period of time?
So actually, I would say it's been quite the opposite.
Okay.
I don't think we had a single, what now I would describe as a typical podcast company, mm-hmm. in the first batch of applications that we had at the beginning of 2018. And the three examples you mentioned also. So SMWX was, and again, what is a podcast? And, you know, when I say typical podcast company, I think a lot has shifted in the last 2 to 3 years in the country, in the space, where now we can say South African podcast and, you know, have a ongoing list that possibly doesn't stop. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying like a lot of these were there perhaps in 2017. Looking specifically at the SAMUP participants, SMWX was you know, pitched to us as the WhatsApp channel. The interesting thing was the WhatsApp part, not necessarily podcast, but they've grown into that now. And, you know, even in terms of the content, initially the content was interview focused around the elections. Okay, Sizwe's talking to some politician today. He interviews that, you know, they do it in the SMWX style with the colors and the let's say, hip or lit, I don't know what the language is, editing and shooting of those videos.
Yeah.
And that's distributed on WhatsApp and also on YouTube and Facebook and things. What they're doing now with the podcast, and I don't know how much you've gotten into, but they've, you know, they're partnering with 702 now, and they take it to another level. So both in terms of the format, but also the type of content, and I guess, you know, any organization as they grow and they innovate, but also they mature in some aspects and move on to what the needs are. If you just look at the SMWX journey, even the volume journey, like they started the pitch to SAMUP. What we were interested in was the work that they were doing with community radio stations, using this software/hardware solution to improve the editorial. And there was an ambition to do something around the advertising model for community radio stations. And certainly all of that has become useful now in them growing the different shows that Volume is doing. You know, What's Crap on WhatsApp, firstly being something distributed on WhatsApp that became a podcast, I guess, you know, in the later phase. They've just done the media diaries now with the summer participants as well, which has been a very interesting look into the behind the scenes during the COVID crisis of how media organizations are operating. And they've got about a bunch of other podcasts. I guess the only thing that maybe was there somewhere in the background at the time was Alibi. And Alibi, one had probably been, you know, well, not probably, it was pre-SAMIP. And the timing of Alibi 2 was convenient. And I would, you know, I would think from what I recall, not even that planned. It was the circumstances that has moved Alibi now into being such a big part of the you know, the Volume success story, what they've been able to do with that. And third was, yeah, CRF, Children's Radio Foundation. What we had worked with them on at first, again, it was WhatsApp. And this is the thing also, 2017 was WhatsApp was innovation. And anyone who was doing stuff on WhatsApp, because the communities there were just, you know, the usage was growing. And I think it was, I can't remember, one of the telcos at the time also had a really good, or maybe even a free package on WhatsApp. So people who would otherwise not be able to spend a lot of money on data were able to use WhatsApp because it was subsidized or free. And also the way WhatsApp worked, and I think it works, it's very similar to podcasts in the sense that someone would, and this is anecdotally that, you know, I've understood this, someone would switch off data on WhatsApp for images and videos and audio notes, etc., until they're in a place where there's free Wi-Fi, and then download everything, and then for the next day or couple of days go through that content now which they have access to, right? And that's I think for me now very interesting for summer, because it makes the content distribution through podcast more accessible.
Yeah.
Someone can have the same type of, you know, behavior, which has now perhaps been introduced to different communities by them using WhatsApp. But once you educate them that, okay, you can have access to audio content, you know, in addition to all the other benefits that audio has, and, you know, how podcasts are created, it has this benefit as well. It's more accessible, because if you do it in this way, you have to be aware of your settings and how your whatever system you're using and your device and your software, etc. But, you know, you don't have to burn through all your data to get your next 10 episodes of a podcast you enjoy listening to and you're learning from, and it's beneficial, and so on.
So take me into the mind of, you know, someone who's sitting on the other side of the desk of funding, because a lot of the times when we are, whether it's a podcast, whether it's a media organization, we are applying with it's a dream, it's a passion, maybe. Whether you're an individual, as I said, or an organization, it's, you have this content, you think it's great, you say, fund me. what are you essentially, you're looking at the, I mean, for you guys as a funder, there needs to be some sort of, you know, what are we getting out, not what are we getting out of it, but what is the profitability of this? How far can this take? You're investing for long-term gain, not for short-term turnover.
To answer that, I'd have to focus more on how MDIF operates. It doesn't matter what your medium, whether it's podcast or you're applying as a radio station or as, it's like, do you have a business model? Are you producing quality content? Do you have a plan? Mm-hmm. And I think the challenge for the podcasting space, as an extension for anything in the digital space, is very similar. It's like, how will you make money? How will you sustain yourself? Yeah. Right now, the question, which, and I'm not the one to answer that, but I think that needs to be answered first, is what are the other opportunities for funding for people in this space? So the one that you want to tap into right now is the grant funding. Like, what are the foundations? What are the donors? What are they interested that overlaps with the podcasting space right now? I mean, the obvious answer in maybe not in June 2020, but certainly in April and May 2020, was COVID-19. What sort of role can you as a podcast company play in, for example, educating people on the virus, mm-hmm. educating people as to how they need to behave and, you know, protect themselves? And, you know, I think anything around that, there has been, and there may still be, I'm not sure, access to funding for either different segments of society, different pockets of communities, depending on what the donors' interests are. Mm. You know, that's not easy to do generally, but the one advice that I have for companies in the space is, and we see this within the SAMHP cohort as well, is that in order to move quick and take advantage of an opportunity, it's often better to collaborate with someone.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps not on a podcast, but if you look at Media Hack Collective, which is one of the SAMHP participants, they partnered with Bekasisa very early on to launch the COVID South Africa COVID-19 dashboard, right? You know, putting into data, putting into graphs and tables and visually accessible dashboard, all this data that was now starting to build up. And as time goes on, that data tells a story. You know, it can be analyzed and, you know, tell very specific advanced stories, but
yeah.
People can look at it and say, okay, cool, this is the graph of infections. At this point, the lockdown started. You can see the impact visually. At this point, we dropped from level 4 to level 3. We see the impact, you know, however you read that, but it's there. And I don't know if there's been enough activity in that space for podcasting overlapping with those who, like Bekasisa, Health E-News, you know, Mail and Guardian, Daily Maverick, all these organizations that are also, you know, highly respected, and the donors, the different donors out there, all the different foundations, know them and know that these guys are doing quality work. In the case of Mail and Guardian, fine, they're putting out a newspaper, not a podcast. But if somebody was to get the Mail and Guardian podcast out, the COVID-19 podcast, I would suspect it would be a lot easier to get that funded by some foundation than it was to get that funded for yourself when you're still, you know, a small, young company without much of a brand behind you yet, right? And, you know, so I think Daily Maverick actually has a podcast. But again, I think even organizations that have been able to get onto the podcast bandwagon, so to say, like if Bekasisa wanted to do their own dashboard, they would have, but it would never have been at the quality and at the scale at which the Media Hack Bekasisa partnership dashboard would be. And I think the same principle carries over to podcasts. So, you know, if Bekasisa was going to launch their own podcast, they would, and I mean, this is my opinion, I think they would be much better off working with someone who is, the way Media Hack is for data, is the whatever for podcasting, right? Mm-hmm. And getting their podcast out. And I don't know, maybe they actually have a podcast out, I'm not even sure. But the point is, like, right now, I think that's the opportunity. We haven't yet, even as MDF globally, seen, like, there's no clear-cut model for any podcast company. Every organization in the space has to look at their own, what's their niche, what's their audience, what's their way. Like, you need to be making revenue through a dozen different streams.
There's been an increase in the amount of people who started podcasting, whether it is business focused or individuals who are coming up with new podcasts, but the listenership side of podcasting is still relatively low. Yes, podcasting is niche, so you aren't expecting millions and millions. You're not on Joe Rogan levels of listenerships. From the other side of things, how you might advise or think of ways that people could increase or approach listeners in an innovative way.
This is something which I often have to say to people who come to me, like you do podcasts. And you come to someone like me and you say, okay, how do I grow a podcast audience? Somebody else, you know, has a website. They come to me and say, how do I grow a website audience? So how do I do this? I'm like, you are the expert. You guys are the experts. You guys operating in the space are the ones who know. Now, you may not think you know enough. You certainly don't know everything, which is, you know, good for you to ask questions. But for me, what's been the most consistently useful bit of information is that, one is, don't listen to anyone. Like, this is advice. I'm giving you advice, which is saying, don't even listen to me, but don't listen to anyone. Mm-hmm. Take whatever everybody is saying and look at what the data is telling you, mm-hmm. right? And then put that data into context. So, you know, a simple example of that advice in practice would be in WhatsApp. Put stuff out on WhatsApp. Look at what the data is. WhatsApp doesn't give you data, right? So what I think of hacks to put into the voice notes that you're putting out on WhatsApp to get people to have some sort of feedback loop, you know, run a contest, put out a phone number and say, if you send me this, I'll put a shout out in my next, you know, give people some incentive, whether it's just getting their name repeated in the next episode or the chance to win something. Knowing that whatever incentive you're putting also could affect their behavior and needs to be taken into account when you're analyzing your data, right? On the one hand, I'm saying it's not rocket science, but on the other hand, it's extremely, extremely difficult, mm-hmm. right? I think it's innovative for people to use YouTube to distribute audio, you know. It seems dumb at first. So you have a static image and you've got the audio playing in the background. But you're doing that because you're reaching out to a community which, through this process of experimenting and innovating and then looking at data, you realize they have a behavior that exists with with YouTube that I need to take advantage of now. I can't just be, you know, harping on the fact that we want you to download Spotify or download Apple, iTunes, whatever it is. Yeah. And if you don't do that, you're not going to get our content. No. You as a part of the community that is interested in our audio uses YouTube as your main thing. Okay. Yeah. We'll give you YouTube as well, or SoundCloud, or whatever, WhatsApp. So, and while audience numbers are important, I don't think in any space, numbers necessarily translate into revenue. So I've heard this a lot. It's like, yeah, no, I started my podcast. I've been running for the last 6 months. I'm not even worried about revenue. I'm focusing on growing my audience. If you reach the same conclusion, if you're saying, I'm not putting ads in my podcast now because the way I'm going to get to revenue is to reach, you know, 1,000 downloads a month and then continue the conversation I've started with a bunch of possible advertisers. I think that's the same end result, but a very different thinking from, oh, I'm not even thinking about revenue now because I know I won't get any money because my podcast is too small. Mm-hmm. No, then I think you're lacking a plan, and that's the problem.
And that brings us to the end of our show. If you would like to advertise on the podcast sessions or be part of our digital monthly magazine, then email me at retaindo@thepodsessions.com.